Welcome to the Round 3 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
Go Bombers, 2-0. Woo!
Go Geelong, 2-0, and we took a one-point win as well.
That, were you in front in the entire game? I don't think so. No. That was
Yeah, we were behind from the get-go. I think they kicked the first one. They kicked the second before we kicked our first. And it was very good.
I think you might have just thought, we can't make the finals. I'll let my twin brother, his team, win a game and they can make the finals.
Mate, I wish we could win games like that. It's a one-point win was definitely very exciting. And my boy Zach Tui kicked the point to put them in front. Well, not in front, but it was a point that made the difference right at the end there. So I appreciated that. Anyway, enough talking about our teams. I'm sure you guys don't really care about that. We're here for Supercoach, and we're very excited, Mark, because two rounds in, I don't think we've had a start quite like this in a very long time. So before we get on to our personal updates, group updates, league updates, we do want to introduce our guest for this show. Faz, welcome back, mate.
Thank you, boys, for having me on again. Loving having the AFL back. I mentioned in a preseason show that I think I'd watched about three quarters of JLT games in total across the 3 weeks of that, or 4 weeks. Reckon I've watched just about every quarter of football I could get my eyes on so far this season. Absolutely loving having the footy back. And as Mark has mentioned quite a few times already, having the full Bombers team back on the park is pretty glorious for us Bombers supporters.
All right, we'll move to our personal update and then we'll cover our group and league. So why don't we start by going around. I'll kick us off. Mark, I think you just pipped me this week, so I'll let you go after me this time. 23-22 was my score for the round, and that was actually bloody fantastic. That moved me up to 1,231st after only two rounds, and it has been quite a while since I've started the season that well. Last week, Mark, we were just talking about how meaningless ranks are this early on in the season. Let me tell you, when you're sitting 1,231st, you think it means a hell of a lot.
They mean everything.
Yeah, exactly right, mate. I'm a top 1,000 coach, basically. My team was a bit disappointing in the back line with Laird and Tui a little bit unders as my primo defenders, but it was great to see Andy Otten notch up 108. Marchbank continue with 82. So the three rookie back line is a little bit better after round two. In the midfield, really, where I just got a majority of the points. I started with 7 premium midfielders and O'Meara. So my worst midfielder was Treloar. Premium midfielder was a Treloar at 108. Next worst was Fife at 117. So that should tell you about how high performing my midfielders were this week. Whit Sandy still working out all right. Will Hoskin-Elliott, if anyone hasn't started him, he banged out 120, which is absolutely fantastic, averaging more than McRae and Dalhouse after two rounds. So he's doing very well as a rookie in my team. And Nan Curvis, I was a bit nervous about picking him in the preseason, but another 124, 119. This is average from the first two rounds was good. And my only really quite disappointing player was Parfitt, but I got to loophole Bowers and keep him off. I just wish that I knew Eddie was coming into the team a little bit earlier on, because he ended up scoring 76. That would have been quite nice.
You won't hear me being quite so chipper. Not a horrible week by any stretch of the imagination, but a bit off the pace by the sounds of things of you two fellas. I had 21.95 this week to follow up a 21.76 in round one. So I'm at the about the 20,000th rank, so not horrible at this stage of the year. In terms of team structure, I guess I wasn't on the first show, so I can quickly take you through it. I went the three premiums down back with Adams, Laird and Johannesson. So Johannesson's a bit of a unique one there. Very good round one, and 83 this week, so not so fantastic. I thought I was playing 6 premium midfielders, although Dan Hannabury is one of them. So I'm sure we'll get into him a little bit later in the show. But a 50 followed by a 71 is not exactly what I paid over $600,000 for. So that's really holding the team back a bit there. Went the Whit-Sandy combo in the ruck, McRae, Dalhouse. I've got Tom Lynch as my third premium forward. He's been quite the disappointment, at least. Well, probably both weeks. He really just sort of managed to cobble together a good score with a big last quarter in round one, and didn't have the same effect in the last quarter this week. So I only had the 43, which is pretty horrible. And I'm missing Will Hoskin-Elliott. So another guy that I'm sure we'll get onto later in the show. But I'd say the addition of Vanderbury and the loss of Will Hoskin-Elliott probably just about sums up a lot of the difference between our teams, I'd say. Now, Mark, I'll let you take the stage now. How did you go this week?
I ranked top 1,000 for the week. That was pretty good. 760th for the week. I was 40,000th last week, and now I'm 4,119. So it dropped a zero from my ranking, which is always very nice. Doherty, 124, was a standout. Had Heath Shaw's 53, but I think that the big difference for me was that I missed all of those really low-scoring rookies. Like, Marcus, you said you had Parfitt. I know a lot of people had Bowers or defensive rookies. So just not having to have any of those guys made a big difference. Having Pau Pepper on my midfield is fun. He scored a 90. Nice to have Swallow back. Salwood, I think he's going to be an important player for us this year, Marcus, and so is Tommy Rockliffe.
Yep.
Very happy with Witts at 100. That's an awesome performance in an absolute drubbing. And the Nankervis-Hoskin-Elliott combo, I know we'll probably get to a lot of questions about them on this week's show, but having them is pretty good. Probably the one disappointing player in my team other than Shaw was Paddy Ryder, 75 after an 86 first week, so pretty slow start to him, but he did have a really good game against Sandilands, so I think that there's definitely some room for improvement there. Yeah, pretty happy with this week, and it was weird last week. Like, I felt oddly confident about my team, and that sort of played out this week. So let's get into the show, guys. There's going to be plenty to talk about, I imagine.
Just before we do, though, let's cut quickly to our group update because we have a bloke sitting in the top 20. Congratulations to James, or MTM All-Stars. Well done to you, James, on your overall rank of 18 so far this season. In terms of a top score for the round, the top score in our Supercoach Coach group was My Footy Players, which is Jeremy's team. He scored 24-23, so an absolutely massive score, moving him up into the top 5,000. So congrats to those two blokes. To our Supercoach Coach leagues, I think we'll both of us are extremely proud about this, and hopefully the rest of you are too. 9 out of the top 13 leagues after only 2 rounds, which is absolutely fantastic. I really do not remember the last time we've crossed the leagues this early. I think
only a couple of years ago that we did that.
The last time we got close, I do remember this happening in the early rounds, but it was sort of like 5 in the top 20. And they stayed up there all season. So, like you said, Mark, hopefully this points to good things, because I'm pretty sure we led that season until the very last round.
Which is every season. I do remember having a pretty decent start last season, but like 7 of the top 10 leagues is pretty ridiculous. There's no one else, no other group out there performing anything like that.
No, and hopefully that means that our community is, you know, continually improving and continually taking in the advice and getting better as Supercoach players, and that we're all challenging each other and improving each other as well. And the fact that we've taken social media questions has definitely opened myself up to perhaps public picks, Mark, that we wouldn't have considered in the past that we've perhaps paid a little bit more attention to. Nankervis, for one, may have been a player that I passed on in seasons past, like Aaron Hall last year, that now I'm a little bit more susceptible to actually starting. So,
can we use that as a bit of a promoter into this week's show, Mark? Mm. It's just the mention of Aaron Hall. One of our good friends, Hondo, who has probably made as much contribution to this show without ever being on it as anyone else, he made a quote today that was, "All that glitters in the early rounds isn't always gold."
Yeah.
And there's a lot of examples of that. So you've got Aaron Hall from last year, I know, started unbelievably well, but just really wasn't a must-have pick. And there's probably some players out there that have had 2 brilliant rounds that may not actually be gold. So I think we should keep that in mind tonight.
Yeah, absolutely, Mark. I'm glad you brought that up, actually. So I'll run through the rundown quickly and then I'll return to that point, Mark. So we're going to cover trade strategy, trade out candidates, and then trade in targets. But overall, I absolutely do agree with you, Mark. I think in seasons past, and I think this is something that I'll put my hand up for, I think we've been a little bit immature on, is that we've always seen this as a really good opportunity to trade. And I think, especially in the last two or three seasons, as we've gotten better at our starting picks, I think we've made perhaps some errors in terms of being a bit too aggressive and trying to target players with very, very good starts to the season after only two rounds. I've traded sideswap rookies that ended up sort of worse than the players that I traded out. Yeah, exactly. I've traded in mid prices that just ended up not working out. I've sideways swapped premiums that ended up getting injured. I think that that's a very good point that you bring up, Mark, and something that we'll pay a bit more attention to this year. And certainly considering the start that we've had as a community and as a whole, I would expect that this year probably a little less likely to pull two trade triggers this week, whereas in the past it's almost something we always definitely recommended. So a little bit of a change of tact potentially, but we'll get into it nonetheless. Let's start off with some trade strategy questions. This first question here is from Steve Soden on Twitter. What constitutes a wise trade in round two? Is it a missed must-have rookie? Is it an underperforming premium? Is it a mid-price bolter or none of the above? As a follow-up question, Andrew Frawley's asked on Twitter as well, when can you justify no correction trade? So speaks perfectly to the point that you just made, Mark. And this year is probably one of the first that I'm considering potentially not doing any trades. I've been very happy with Otten, Hampton, Marchbank, Will Hoskin, Elliott, just off those sort of four players. And then the fact that you can run another couple of rookies on field, I feel like we have a very stable base of cheap players to pick from, which gives me sort of increased confidence in the structure that we've started off with so far this season. How do you feel about that, Mark?
Yeah, look, I think you've got to be careful saying we all started off with, because I think it really is that combination of those players. So if you have Marchbank, Nankervis, Will Hoskin, Elliott, and I think you could put Witts into that category as well, you're going to be pretty happy with the rest of your starting team, I think. They're the sort of players that I think people are drawn to this week in regards to trading, and for good reason as well. They're really good structural players. So Marchbank and Hoskin Elliott, they're a bit more expensive, but they allow you not to have one of these really sucky rookies on the field. And they're also a little bit older and high draft picks, so they have that pedigree there as well. And I think that Witts sort of can keep a rookie off your field as well, so it falls into the same category. And Nankervis being a mid-pricer is probably a little more different. But I think that there are times where you can justify no correction trades, and we'll probably explore that a little bit tonight. I'm probably 75% chance of not trading this week. It depends on team sheets a little bit. In regards to what are the most wise trades in round two, if you missed an obvious player, that's where you'd be looking to trade. So like the Aaron Halls last year, it's someone that just looks like they're about to completely break the game open. I know that you went to Aaron Hall last year and it didn't work out, Marcus, but you've almost got to go for the Will Hoskin Elliott types, that who is not going to score 120 every week. He scored three goals in the last quarter. It's just like he's not that essential, but he just pegs as being potentially quite important. So I think that if you're missing those guys, that's where you should really be looking around with trades.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Mark. I like the comparison that you drew there, saying, you know, with Hall and Elliott, because I think they are very different player types. One's 440,000, one's 200. So Will Hoskin and Elliott only has to keep this up for a few rounds to be quite a great pick. Hall has to keep it up the entire year. So I think that's the main difference. Like when you're side swapping here and you've backed in your entire preseason of research, consider, is the player that I'm trading in some guy that I'm willing to admit that I've made a complete misjudgment on for the entire season? Or is it a player that I've made a misjudgment on for potentially just the first half? And I'm a lot more confident in saying that maybe I missed out on Will Hoskin Elliott when he's potentially a great buy for 200K and be able to trade him out for plus 200K than being able to say Aaron Hall, I'm confident that he was going to keep up 105 average or whatever.
And I guess Mark Murphy maybe this year's Aaron Hall.
Exactly right. So before we go into plays in detail, Faz, any thoughts in general about this?
I can probably just give the perspective of someone who's not quite so happy with their starting teams. And I think it really just boils down to that list that Mark put forward earlier. I think, you know, it's the sort of Marchbank, Witts, Powell Pepper, Nankervis and Hoskin Elliott. I don't know if there's anyone that I've omitted, maybe Otten as well from that list, but if there's a real, like, a rookie that's screaming out to be picked that you don't have in your team, then I don't know if you can just let this week go by without trading them in.
Yeah.
You might end up being quite a bit behind in terms of cash generation. As we've mentioned, there are a few guys this year, the Parfitts and Picketts, that are just not scoring highly at all. So we'll probably have a first wave where everyone will be, you know, generating enough cash, but that might sort of run out fairly quickly. And that's where I think that not having one of those real top line guys that could push the sort of 400k barrier with their price, that's where that could really hurt you. So as someone who doesn't have Will Hoskin Elliott, I think this week I will definitely be trading. But I think the points about premiums, it's easy to be sucked into 2 weeks of scoring and forget that it's a 22-week season that we're picking these players for. And yet not a lot can really change, I don't think, in the 2 weeks. So yeah, I would say that I'm sort of in line with what's been said before me.
So I've drawn up a quick framework that I think might be useful for our listeners to apply for this week's trades. And I'd like to get both your feedback on this. So what I've done is look at the types of reasons that you would consider trading this week and broken them up into yes, maybe, very risky, and no. So for me, yes, I'm definitely thinking about trading here. There's three buckets of players. One, did you miss a rookie that you just have to pick up? And Mark, you flagged quite a lot of those blokes. And that doesn't mean 110K rookies. Sometimes they're 200K rookies that structurally are key. Our Supercoach coach community as a whole were very exposed on the Witts Sanderlin's risk. And that's worked out very well so far. So structurally, I feel that that's quite important so far in terms of how our community has performed relative to everyone else. So that'd be something that I'd be like you've already sort of championed, Mark, recommend potentially being a key driver for success. The next type of players is who's been a crap pick. So Hanbury potentially falls into that selection, potentially not. It's a lot easier to judge a crap pick at a mid-pricer level than any other level. Because at a rookie level, I mean, they're 100K. It only takes one or two big games to really come good. And at a premium level, two games probably isn't enough exposed form, considering you pick them off years of history. And the third under this yes category is what restructuring can I do? And that might include a side swap that you don't quite appreciate. But what restructuring double trade might I do to get me to a better rookie structure or a better team structure? So that might be trying to pivot Pal Pepper on field. That might be trying to get another backline rookie on field because Marchbank, Otten, Hampton all look decent starters, or and you have one too many backline. I'm talking about that type of restructuring. To me, these three sort of buckets fall into the most certainly yes camp. This is the most likely reasons you'll be actually pulling the trade trigger this week. The ones that are a little bit more marginal, the maybe buckets. Which mid prices did I miss? And we always acknowledge mid prices are difficult to pick. Mid prices that you've already decided not to pick and then shown 2 weeks of good form, which we know they can do. Yes, they might keep that up. They might end up as premiums at a mid price tag, but they might end up just scoring shit for the rest of the season as well because they're mid prices. So they're risky. They're maybes. The other ones are average picks. That's why I think Hanbury, does he fall into a crap pick or an average pick this year? It's a little bit uncertain. The very risky category, I only actually have one bucket of players in there, and that's missed premiums, because it'd be a Patrick Dangerfield type who scored 139, or Ablett in seasons past, or Dane Cox in seasons past. Like, blokes that they'll make or break your season not having them. Potentially Max Gorn might fall into that category, but 118 off a 118 price tag, maybe not. So this is a very risky category because they kind of need to be ball busters for you to trade them in. Premiums are generally not blokes that will change by 20% over the course of the season. They've had years of history and they tend to improve incrementally. So those are sort of the buckets, and almost everybody else I'd have in a no trade sort of bucket. So thoughts on that sort of structure at a high level?
Seems pretty clear to me, man. I don't really have any deeper comments than that.
Yeah, I think that covered it quite nicely.
All right, so I'm not saying these are hard and fast rules, and as we move through the rest of the questions, I'm sure sort of exceptions will come up. But nonetheless, I think it's a good way to frame the way we approach the remaining questions, and I think based on the conversation we've had so far and what you started off by bringing up, Mark, that's a good way to set the scene. So let's move on to trade out candidates, and then we'll finish off by talking about the trade in. So we get a lot of questions on social media. Thanks for all your questions this week, guys, because I think this is probably the first week that we've hit almost like 100 responses on social media off the question call. So very, very much appreciate that. But we're going to split it up into trade-out candidates and then trade-in candidates, because looking at a one-for-one is very difficult because everybody's team structure is slightly different. There's certain one-for-one trades that are much more prevalent that we got a lot more questions about than others. And for those, I'll delve into them specifically. For example, Ruffid to Nankervis was one that we got a lot of questions on. So with that setting the scene, let's head into the trade out candidates. And again, I've split these players out, and we're going to start off with the injury affected candidates. So this first question is here from D Down Under on Twitter. Keep Goldie and trade Strindica to Proust, or trade Goldie to Steph Martin? And sort of the complimenting question from Hayden Murdoch or at Entourage1970 on Twitter is, should he trade Nankervis in and Ruffhead out because he had Goldstein's donut on the weekend? So basically, Goldstein's missed a game. Obviously, injury concerns mean that they're scoring concerns over the next few rounds as well, more immediately, whether or not that injury lingers and affects his output. Would you be tempted to trade to a bloke like Proust, who presents a lot of upside or wits? Would you consider trading to somebody like Stefan Martin, who's done quite well for his starting price point? Or would you bring in a ruck forward cover instead? Mark, any thoughts about how you deal with Goldie, or would you just keep him?
It's interesting, mate. It depends how the rest of your team's going, in a sense. Like, I really think that if teams with wits that are too, like ours, they just structure up so much differently to every other team that I think that if you wanted to go down that route, I could understand doing that. In regards to the specifics of this request, Proust, he's got 111 on the weekend, but that was a playing as the sole ruck or number one ruck with Dora's backing him up. Now, Dora's been declared fit for this week. Goldie's been declared fit as far as I know. So I think it's really hard to trade Goldstein out now unless you're actually using it to restructure your team. And I'm not sure that Strinadika to Proust is worth it if Proust is, like, he was dropped before the weekend. He only came in because Goldstein was out, and he filled in for Goldstein, and then Goldstein comes back. Does Proust continue to play? Not totally convinced that he will, and if he does, is he going to score very well? So, yeah, I think that there's a lot of reasons to either keep Goldstein or use it as an opportunity to restructure. Should you bring in cover? Now, the problem is that last weekend, Richmond played on the, what was it, the Thursday or Friday night, and Goldstein didn't play till the Sunday, so you wouldn't have actually known in advance anyway, and Nankervis wouldn't have actually helped with cover for that weekend, so he wouldn't have stopped the zero. So, look, I think that starting with Nankervis and having that ruck forward link was obviously important, but even if you have that link, unless you know in advance, it's not always going to be providing you cover.
Probably won't go any deeper on that. If Goldie plays this week, then you'd keep him, and sort of the decision to trade any other players is almost independent of that, and you just consider what works best for the rest of your team. If Goldie is out, then I personally would probably pick Witts if you didn't have him. Otherwise, I'd pick a premium. Like you said, Mark, picking a ruck forward as cover for an injury-concerned player, while can be effective, also carries an inherent level of risk, because, like you said, you need the game timing to line up to be able to pivot them in time. All right, next question is from Matthew Donnelly. He has Joel Smith from Melbourne, which we already flagged last week. He's out for 4 months with a shoulder injury. Is it worth waiting another week to look at the Sydney backman, or just trade him out this week? So a little bit of that, I think, will depend on your rookie structure. If you don't have Marchbank, Hampton, or Otten, potentially even Stewart, then you might consider trading to them. But there's not a massive amount of backline rookies available and scoring decently this year. So I really have no issue with anybody sort of holding and waiting and seeing on the Sydney debutants over the weekend. Mark, thoughts?
Yeah, I really like the look of Newman. Had in the preseason, did last year, to be completely honest. I'd be pretty tempted to wait for him. And he's someone that I'll strongly consider bringing in next week. I might even not use a correctional trade this week, but still use one next week instead.
Yeah, and I think even though, Mark, we do not really like picking a floating donut player from the start of the season for the exact reason that players just sort of get dropped after round one, like we've seen so far this season, we are absolutely open to players that we pick starting the season getting dropped and not trading them out immediately so that we could sort of maximize their loophole. Let's move on to non-injury affected players, but just straight up premiums that aren't really performing quite up to scratch. So we got a heap of questions about Hanabry, which Faz has already raised, and Faz is experiencing the pain of Hanabry at the moment. So we will cut to you first, Faz. But first, this question from Michael Eskander on Facebook. Should we waste a trade on Hanners? He's guessing that he'll score well in the future, but his break-even's above 200. And then we also got another question here from Adam Pianto on Facebook. He wants to keep Hanners and not burn a trade, and he just wants to hear someone say that that's the right move. And he got something like 13 responses and multiple likes, which from a Supercoach point of view and a community point of view, I'm quietly really excited about, because that shows quite some grit to say I'm going to trust and back my decision. Something that maturity is definitely built over in our community over time. So well done to you, Adam, and everybody else that's for feeling that way. I'm not sure if it's necessarily the right move to keep Hanners with a 200 break even, but we will get into that. And then sort of the last question that we got in relation to Hanners was from David Siddles. And this is actually the question I want to start off with Hanners. If the Supercoach boys could explain what kept them from keeping Hanabry, because during the preseason show, he was one of the top selections. So I want to address that first, because absolutely, Mark, I think both of us talked him up. Both of us picked him in our Patreon Supercoach coach team when we released a team 2 to 3 days prior to lockout, that who would actually pick Hanners was in it. Let's give our listeners a little bit of an explanation why we've been talking him up, but why we didn't actually go with him, and sort of go into why potentially he isn't scoring too well. So from my point of view, it was purely sort of who's going to burn me. I think, Mark, the longer we've played the game, the more we look toward premiums in the sense of far out. How much could this guy hurt me if I don't pick him up? Nick Nat's an example of that. Ablett in the past. Rockcliffe is probably a clear example of why we ended up with him instead of Hanabry this season. So both of us, I know we ended up on the side of the coin that were worried about being burnt by a player like Rockcliffe. Do you have any sort of more to add on that? And were you particularly concerned about Hanabry pumping out 50 or 70? Because even though I didn't pick Hanabry, I certainly wasn't expecting this start from my point of view.
No. I definitely tipped Hanabry to have a really good season. Everything indicated that he probably would. And it's to do with, you mentioned it on last week's I think, Marcus, which was around the risk profile of Hanabry, and that's sort of what you were saying there, that he averaged 113 last week. Absolute best case scenario, given how deep the Sydney midfield is, that he would get up to 120, which is an awesome season, but that's not like a huge level of improvement. It's not 20 points, which some players are capable of. And I think that it was just looking at someone that maybe had a bit more upside at that price and that just fit in with the rest of our deep midfields, I guess. And so for me, it was probably Tom Mitchell filled that spot for quite a while, just because I thought he had a potential, like, a bit more improvement in him than Hanabry. Ended up putting Rockcliffe into that spot. Quite risky durability-wise, which Hanabry maybe isn't, but could maybe average a lot higher than Hanabry. So I guess they're the reasons that I just wanted to probably take more of a bit more of a gamble in that position with my team.
So Faz, I think it's right to cut to you, because you actually have Hanabry. What are you thinking about doing with him, mate? His break-even's 235. Now, he's unlikely to score 61.5, which is current average. But if he were to do that, that would result in a drop of 77,000 after only 1 week.
I guess just picking up from one thing you mentioned there, will he score well enough for the rest of the season to average 115 overall? That would be difficult given the two low scores to start, but also sort of it doesn't really matter at this point anymore. That those scores have happened, that they're already in the books. If he averages 115 for the remainder of the season, then I'd sort of be quite happy holding on to him.
Yeah.
I don't need him to pull up his average overall so it looks good.
That's fair.
You know, at the end of the season, I just want the most points that I can get in my team. One thing that I'm just sort of thinking about when I'm looking at the other players around his price point is that while nobody else has a break-even quite so high, you look at the other sort of premium mids in the game, and they're all got break-evens, you know, above 100. I think Rockliffe is at 95, but, you know, even Pendlebury's at 108, and I don't see there being a whole lot to gain by swapping sideways. I might miss a little drop in price this week from Hanbury, but that happens if you track your premiums prices throughout the season. Nobody stays at the, you know, 600 plus level that we pay for them at the start of the year, and it seems like I might have, not to say that any of what you've said earlier doesn't count, but I might have just got a bit unlucky in the sense that I picked a guy who had his sort of poor patch of form right at the start of the season, and I probably just need to, you know, try and look beyond these couple of weeks and just, you know, remember the reason I got Hannes is just because I wanted a good consistent midfielder. He hasn't been consistent to start with, but he has been over, you know, quite a few years now.
Yeah.
And sort of try and remember that and not be sucked into just, you know, pulling the trigger now, because as we've seen so many times before, the guy that you bring in will, you know, that week get injured or that week have their low score. And Hannes will have his, you know, breakout game, or, you know, break himself out of the slump this week. So I think it's probably just a question of, you know, can you hold your nerve and just grit it out? And, you know, then maybe a few weeks down the track, if he's still scoring poorly, that's when you can sort of start to say, oh, okay, now we've got enough exposed form. There's something more serious happening here with Hanbury. And unfortunately, that'll mean you've copped a far bigger hit to the to the wallet by the time you have to make that decision. But I just don't think that what we've seen from the first two games is enough to throw him under the bus.
Yeah, my only concern about Hanbury is that he also had a fairly limited, not limited in terms of preparation, but limited in terms of scoring and actual game performance over the JLT series. So for me, I haven't really even seen one outstanding game from Hanbury. And considering that he lost the grand final, quit booze, and supposedly is here to prove himself this season, that's my concern, is that there might be an injury sort of affecting Hanbury. But I absolutely agree, Faz. I thought I'd come into this show saying, I know a lot of you potentially want to keep Hanbury because that might be the sensible thing, but like there might be a legitimate case for moving him out. But after hearing you speak, I am a bit more inclined to keep Hanbury if I did have him. Having said that, though, I'm not confident about Hanbury after 51 and 71. He's still starting off as one of the top 10 priced players in the entire of Supercoach. So for me, it's can you find an opportunity to restructure your side? If you can, I would. If you don't have Powell Pepper on field and you have Hanbury, in my opinion, trade down to Powell Pepper. Get him on field because he's bloody averaging 80-something and he's looking like a great rookie. Trade in a premium elsewhere. Get rid of a rookie that's scoring shit like Jack Bowes or Parfitt on your forward line, or Hampton even in your back line is only averaging 50. If you can't find a restructuring opportunity, then I'd probably hold on to Hanbury. But if you can, I'd trade him. Mark?
Really interesting discussion, guys. I think, like, if you look at round 17 and round 18 last year, Hanbury scored 68 and 76. So pretty similar to his last two games.
He
then scored 144, 136, 131, and 116 in the next four games. So I would not be totally surprised. I would not be really surprised at all if he came out and put in a huge 100 this week. And look, he's proven that he's done that before. So I think that is worth keeping in mind. And I think that the way that Faz is looking at it is really smart. But I also think that you added some good points at the end there, Marcus, which were, it's not really about sidewaysing Hanbury. I don't think that Hanbury to someone around his price point is really probably the smart move to make, because it costs you a trade and it might end up about equal in points by the end of the year. But what I do think is there's a few players. There's someone like maybe Bontempelli who gets you a little bit of cash and he looks like he could go completely nuts this year. That might be someone you're interested in. Heppel at about 500,000 gets you about 100,000 in the bank, which allows you to maybe do a rookie up to Will Hoskin-Elliott, or maybe even down to Mark Murphy, where you get 170K and you can maybe even bring in Nankervis or something and get one of these other sort of the players that we spoke about at the start of the show that are maybe worth making some moves to bring in. So I do think that there are probably specific trades that you could do with Hanbury that would allow you to restructure your team and make some big benefits. But the benefits aren't really going to come from who you bring in for Hanbury. It's going to become from how that affects the rest of your team more than likely. So whether you can bring in the Hoskin Elliott types.
Agree. So we'll move on to the next question here from Leanne Dior at Mad Swans Fan on Twitter. A few people are asking if they should keep Lynch. What do you think? So here I would say this is, for me, a fairly similar scenario to Hanbury in the sense that you understand their downside, but it won't happen much across the season, and you understand their upside as well. So Lynch, even though he scored, was it 40-something on the weekend and wasn't quite up to scratch, you picked a key position forward, and he played against GWS, and they got absolutely crushed. Like, that's within the realms of possibility. So, yes, there are potentials to get rid of Lynch that would look attractive, but that would be in tandem with changing your team dynamic or bringing in someone more important rather than getting rid of Lynch himself. Mark, based off the comments that we had on Hannah's, is that just sort of a tick off for you as well?
Yeah, it is, mate.
I'll just note, last year, Tom Lynch against GWS, 39 points. So
thanks, fans. I like that.
Oh, sorry, 42. But yes, yeah, so kind of. Hopefully, that's a good sign that the rest of the season won't be so bad.
Yeah. We're actually releasing this week's show in two parts, so thanks for listening so far. We've got a lot more content to go, so we'll be dropping a second half later today. Yeah. Don't want this get crazy. Yeah. Don't want this get crazy. Yeah. Don't